Support for Commodity Week comes from the Friends of WILL and from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign. With crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at sfarmmarketing.com.
This is the March 14 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists today include Bill Mayer of Strategic Farm Marketing from right here in Champaign County, Illinois, Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities out of Newmarket, Indiana, and Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. You can always find Commodity Week online, listen to it on demand anytime you'd like at WILLAG.org. It's kind of an interesting week in the commodity markets, Kurt. Last week was really rough. This week, at least through Thursday, was not nearly as bad.
Yeah, we're actually seeing some optimism materialize. The market was incredibly oversold. We saw that the funds are super short corn, which is just ripe for some type of event to take place, so that hopefully they'll cover those short positions. But news-wise, we've seen on the news wires that China might have bought the 3 million metric tons of corn and some ethanol. They did buy some confirmation on that. There was some confirmation. They did buy some sorghum out of the Pacific Northwest. But the Pacific Northwest is a real key in through here, because those North Dakota farmers need some type of outlet here, because they've been bogged down having to ship those beans and other grains down to St. Louis. Technically, man, moved lower, moving back up. We're in a position to see a weekly price reversal to the upside. Some time counts a little off, but they're close enough that maybe we've got a late winter, early spring low here and have a little recovery for a change.
Opening that PNW up, if it's possible, if a deal can get struck with China, or if we just see something more happening, really is very important for not only the Dakotas, but for the Midwest, because the base is just backed right up to the Mississippi and Illinois rivers.
Yeah, it affects the whole country is affected whenever we have the situation that we had there last year with the bases and that. Another thing I was going to mention, I totally agree with what Kirk said, is that at our talking there a week ago Tuesday, we talked about the wheat, and if the wheat could lead the way, that might be a good indication. We kind of saw that this week, and I think that's a good sign. Let's hope we can hold it here where we're at.
Bill Mayer, of course, is with Strategic Farm Marketing. Let's follow up just a little bit on that, because last week was an ugly week for wheat.
Yes, it was. I kind of thought we may have put a bottom in about a week before that, actually the Friday before our meeting over there. But then we kind of ended up the week a lot lower. But sometimes you have to test those lows a couple times, and I think we're getting there. We, as Kurt said, we really were oversold in the wheat. We really had some pretty big fund shorts. We have big fund shorts in the corn. I think that's indicating that as we move into the spring season, we'll start worrying about some weather and that. Right now, we're probably in the stage where we're just choppy sideways, doing the technical thing and not really seeing a lot of fundamental information. It's going to take a while before people get worried about the wet spring. A lot of people are talking about that, but it's pretty early to get excited about that yet.
Wayne, can you tell me about this relationship between wheat and the other commodities, corn in particular, and why it's so important that it find a bottom, that it lead? What's the relationship between it and corn, and why does this matter?
Well, wheat, as cheap as it got, is a feed wheat, as feed grain, and a feed grain substitutes for corn. So basically, if wheat's too cheap, corn can't go anywhere, because that's the way that is. You know, and we got some really big news as far as carryout numbers, nothing too exciting on the report last Friday. All those numbers sort of got us, and we say the bad news is always the most at the bottom. You know, and Dan's Wicker, we want to thank him for helping turn this market around, because when everybody gets bearish at the bottom, and Dan done a real good job of it. So we just want to say thank you, Dan, and go on. But I think, you know, that all of it is here is we got to the point of just we're doggone oversold, and the farmers, the bin doors are closed. They got just sick of these prices. The basis wasn't even good enough to pull it out and buy a call. It was just saying, hey, we're tired of it. And they had to start bidding up and looking for corn, for beans, and some wheat out there. And then we saw a little cash moving, and the idea that the commercials are coming back in, and was the commercial movement that sort of spurred the fun to people. They saw basis is improving at different levels. They saw that we're looking for corn. They heard the rumors of shipments, of sales, and everything like that. And as both the guys have said, the funds were just overly short. For this time of year, they had a record shorts. So we saw some of that the last 2 days coming out. You know, we want to continue to see that. We saw a sell back off on Thursday in the beans off the highs of the day, but we really would like to see this continue on through Friday. The weekly close would be very important because the funds do look at technical movement and see what it is. And we'd love to see that bottoming action be projected by a good close on Friday.
So one thing I think we probably ought to remind producers and landowners, others who are interested of, is that in that WASDE report, there was an extra 100 million bushels that showed up in the ending stocks for corn. The market absorbed that really well over the last week, but we're now not at 1.735, we're at 1.835. So that number's there.
Yeah, the corn number's workable, and it's not super tight, but it's under 2 billion, and if these exports pick up and you look at true feed usage, that can maybe shrink a little bit. But the bullish enthusiasm comes into next year. If you carry the 1.8 over into next year, you have extra 2, 3 million acres. You have trend line yield 176 bushels to the acre. You factor in 14.8, 15 billion bushel demand. That tightens up real quick. We're at 1.6, 1.5. If we have the Chinese news on top of that, that subtracts from the bottom line. If we don't get the acreage we're intended to get, that's a concern, because in wet years, we typically lose 2 to 3 million acres of corn, whether it's prevent plant or whatever. Then it's a situation where there's some optimism as you look at that 2019. Everything has to be perfect to keep us in this 1.6 area, 1.4 area. If not, we could be down to 1.1. That would take the stocks to use ratio below 10%, and that's equivalent to the 95 or 2012 rally.
So we do need to talk about the snowpack. He mentioned wet weather prevent plant. Those acres normally are out west or in the northern part of the United States. They're just covered still, and had another storm this week across the Dakotas, Minnesota, Wisconsin. The snowpack is large. The meteorologists we talked to on the closing market report, all five of them are concerned that this is going to cause a problem for flooding all the way up and down the Mississippi River, and certainly could very well delay the planting season.
Yeah, it's almost too obvious, and I think one of the things that got into the market today was that we did see kind of the 10th to 14 day forecast a little bit drier, but then they came out as you get out that 14 to 18 day period, it looks like we're starting to see the same pattern come back in, where we have these systems come across and continue to get the rains. So I think we're starting to watch it pretty close here. And going with what Kurt was saying there too, let's throw in the idea that China, as there's been more talk about this in recent weeks, China is probably, you can make a pretty strong case that they would pretty well use up their reserves of corn by about a year from this summer, out there in 2020 summer. So they've got some decisions to make. Are they going to bring corn in? Are they going to try to increase production? That type of thing. So I think, and Kurt also used 176 number on the yield. I've been saying in my meetings this winter, you know, 172 sounds like a low yield, but 5 years ago it would have been a record yield. So we need to realize we don't necessarily have to raise 176 every year.
Following up on the China discussion and how much corn they have, of course, they changed that number, added an inordinate number of bushels to their supply. I think it was in November of this past year. And then they turned around and said, well, we're going to use it all. And they had a time frame of by the fall, I think, of this year. He's talking about 2020. Nonetheless, clearly it appears now that China will need to try to do something for their corn internally. That's an opportunity for the United States, I take it.
They call it DDGs, Todd. You know, we were the biggest shipper of DDGs to them until the tariffs come on. that market, if it opened up, you know, gives us another 25 to 50 million bushels corn right quick off the bat, just to that we could add to our ethanol production, because ethanol will become profitable again. Instead of taking that 25 million off last month, we can be adding maybe 50 to 100 million back onto that ethanol grind, and that would be a big, big deal. Let's not forget, our EPA people are pushing for a 15% blend for the summer here like that. That is a big deal too. But we need a market for the DDGs so we can sell the ethanol too along the way. So it's a big thing. It's a big thing that China is saying they were going to need some sort of corn or some other feed use like that. Let's remember, we're talking about African swine flu. Yes, it's bad. Yes, they've had a lot of hogs die. Yes, they're filling in with chickens. Chickens eat more bean meal and more corn than a hog does. It's fast. They turn around. They're trying to make it up like that. And we also did sell some hogs to China here in the last couple weeks. That is a big deal. Our hog prices are terrible. The poor hog farmer is going broke. We need to sell hogs. We need to get the meat going. There's some good things happening here. We just need to get these last little things done. Make sure everything is done before the two presidents meet so nothing can screw up. And let's have a really good photo op.
All right. So U.S. EPA this week, you mentioned ethanol, did release a proposed rule that would allow E15 to be used in summer blends across the United States. It's a proposed rule. They're going to try to move quickly to make that rule in to a format that can be actually deployed across the U.S. And I don't know, I suppose Sonny Perdue, the Secretary of Agriculture, is going to move as quickly as he can to put this in place. However, the rule didn't include anything that would allow 2001 and newer vehicle liability, that it's just not there. It's going to be stuck, it appears, in blender pumps and other pumps that are already in place. Do we have an idea from the marketplace how many extra gallons or of E15 this could put in, what this means really for the corn market at all?
I don't have anything offhand. The main concern is the E15 pumps availability for it, but it's definitely a boost. Any additional demand whatsoever is more than welcome. But it's not just U.S. ethanol here. We're seeing a situation where China's committed to a 10% blend as they go into 2020. So they've got ethanol plants in the working. And short-term in here, there's talk of China buying U.S. ethanol to fill that void until their plants get going. So it's still a booming market. I've not written ethanol up. They've talked about the blender's wall and so forth. I think there's still more room to grow.
You know, the estimation, Todd, is they say that the E15 could add 25 million bushels of usage out there right now if we can get it into this year by the beginning of summer. You're 100% right. Kurt's 100% right. Can we get it in everything? Will people pull up and say, oh, I don't mind putting E15 instead of E10 in? I don't know how it's going to be accepted by the public, but I know my car sure will take it.
So let's talk a little bit about the acreage battle that is not in place, because there's not really a battle for acres, but we do need to know what that looks like for the coming year. We got a lot of numbers this week. Allendale released theirs, Informa have released theirs. Of course, we have the USDA Ag Forum numbers as well.
Yeah, I think the next big number, of course, is that acreage number. Personally, I think that I don't see if we could get 2 million additional acres to 3 million, I would think that's the high end of where my guess would be. The way we're sitting right here now with the Midwest and the Northern Plains in such bad shape from a weather standpoint. So what will the March report say? Well, that's already probably been surveyed, you know, as we moved in the first couple of weeks of March. I believe that we may have 2 or 3 million there on that report, but then the proof will be whenever we actually get it planted.
Yeah, corn-wise, that's a good conversation, but it's going to come down to weather, and the weather's going to be the dominant factor. Here in the Midwest, a little bit heavier corn, because guys were a little heavier beans last year, but the Dakotas, that's the main thing. Man, they got burned on those beans. They're thinking corn, but with 50 feet of snow on the ground and melting and lakes everywhere, that's going to be quite some challenge. And when you look at the bean number, seeing that big of a drop, you know, we'll have to see how that pans out, because if we can't get the crop in, they're going to put some beans on it. They're not going to leave those acres idle unless you get a pretty good prevent plant dollar.
I think they're planting a lot of acres for prevent plant in the Dakotas right now with that snow cover, and if they can delay and get without getting in trouble with the insurance companies, I think looking at the profitability that they've had the last couple of years, the basis levels they've had, if they have a chance to collect prevent plant, we're going to see that extra 1 million or 2 million acres up in that region that's heavily covered with snow, heavily wet, and it's farther north, so you know the late planting date comes earlier in the year. I think prevent plant will come into effect this year.
And we really had a low prevent plant year last year.
The grain stocks report is due out on the same day as the prospective plantings report. Those both come out at 11 a.m. Central Time on March the 29th. That's a Friday, so 2 weeks from this Friday, from the Friday we're at this point. That grain stocks number sometimes in March does contain a surprise. Darrell Good used to say that both the March number and the July number could be a little finicky, and they move around quite a bit. I don't know whether it's because of the way they survey or what the companies turn in, but there can be some surprises there.
Yeah, I think you just, during that time frame, you have a lot more in transit, a lot of stuff coming off the farm in that time of the year. The big thing I think they'll look at on the stocks number is what it relates to the demand on the feed side of it, and you know whether we've used more feed or maybe produced less corn than we thought. Your June and September ones usually have larger surprises than the March does, but I would expect to see feed usage maybe indicated to be a little bit larger than what it was on the December report.
Yeah, feed usage is the key in through here. It's going to be big because we haven't been selling beans and beans haven't been moving. But the big thing is here we're seeing this crush report. We're looking for another record crush, about 158, 159 million bushels. So true feed usage is the key in here. And if you're looking at raw numbers, it's going to be big because we just haven't been moving.
The cattle on feed report last week give you any indication of how many are in the herd and whether this is something that's worthwhile? And again, we're still dealing with a winter storm that creates some problems.
Yeah, it was a catch up in numbers. The placements were a little bit on the light side. The thing we're seeing though is these cattle coming to market are lightweight, so they're pulling stuff forward in through here, and export demand's good. And the biggest thing though is domestic consumption. Per capita consumption. I know I'm doing my part eating beef, but overall the whole nation's doing their part. And when we see these exports pick up in through here, this beef market's probably going to hang in there a little better than anticipated.
One other item that we probably ought to take up, and we haven't discussed, this is surprisingly enough, very much about the soybeans and certainly not about South America at this point. Earlier in this week, CONAB came out with its numbers. That's the USDA counterpart in Brazil. They dropped their total production to 113.5 million metric tons. That's down a couple million from their previous estimate.
Yeah, and that was a little bit surprising that they dropped that much that soon. They generally don't, but they had some rough weather. We started out tremendous. Remember, we were at 122 to start with. Then we dropped down and we went to here and there, and basically we're 115 in February, and now in March we're 113.5. They're admitting that they had some really rough weather. Now, that's still, I think, their third largest crop ever. But it was going to be their largest crop ever when they started, so we've dropped back at least two places, and that's good. Now, another thing to consider, and I read in two news wires today, was they're not in the good shape to cover all of China's needs, even with this good crop, and better than last year in Argentina, because they had built up stocks, just like the U.S. has now, all except Brazil had them before, and we ate up all those stocks last year, shipping all the beans out of down there. So that does open up a little bit, because the carry out from down there is very, or the carry in for this crop was very small. So, I mean, actually their total number of beans isn't going to be near what it was last year for export.
A couple of things that I was thinking about as it relates to that crop in Brazil in particular. They got in early. They have had dry conditions. The crop is smaller. The harvested acreage number from CONAB this week was over 50%, or right at it, and it's running ahead of schedule. Generally, if you think about it, a harvest low sometime, that may be something that producers have to think about, though I don't know where the export market and BR-163 moves that from. You know, in the United States is 50%. That's what we use. It may be 50% plus some lag for the BR-163.
Yeah, I think it's pretty close. I mean, I think that 50% number is important, and I think we've seen some rain, some weather in some areas that have caused some problems on getting the truck transportation to the ports, which has probably slowed that down. Maybe you're right. We need maybe to get a little bit more before we can think about harvest lows. But overall, the Brazilian, the Argentina crop is about the same as last year. But as Wayne, an excellent point, it's going down, and that's really the important thing from the market standpoint.
Yeah, just to follow up here, the thing about the Brazilian crop is they expanded acres by 3 million metric tons. So when you compare crop size last year to this year, it says there might have been significant drawback in yield. Then, too, don't forget the Argentine crop is way better than last year. And the concern there is Argentina bought a lot of U.S. beans en route to China.
Yeah, and they did increase. I think I saw an increase in their acreage or in their total production for this year, sometime this week, by a couple million metric tons, if I remember correctly, or thereabouts.
Well, the Argentine crop's anywhere from 10 to 12 million metric tons above last year, so they almost offset what we're losing in Brazil.
So anything else that we ought to talk about that's in the marketplace today that you have on your list to discuss at this point? Because we really have gone through the gamut, but there are some other ideas.
Well, one thing, Todd, the way the weather has been, we talked about maybe lighter weights in the cattle. Do you know why they're lighter weights? Because you couldn't feed them enough. They lost weight, and they finished sooner because of that. We placed them younger and lighter, so they're finishing like that. But they are consuming just as much feed to get to lighter weights. So that's what I think could help with the surprise in this next stocks report, because we have been feeding the dickens out of those poor cattle that are out there in the cold shivering and not gaining any weight.
So you think that might not be in the marketplace at this point, but because they've just discounted, not realizing that the thermodynamics were causing just a whole lot more corn to be used, but the weights to not pick up?
We're hoping so.
And I might just add, I think if you looked at the cattle market, I think the trade kind of got the idea that, okay, things are getting better now, but really, we're just starting to begin some of the problems, because I think mud, in some cases, is worse than the cold and the snow. So I think we got a long ways to work through that, and these cattle weights are going to continue to stay light, and they are going to continue to eat more corn.
So one final...
The problem on the cattle, too, right now, you talk to a cattle guy, is not pulling the calf, it's pulling calves out of the mud and out of the snow banks and stuff. So these cattle and feed reports, you know, it'll be interesting to see how these weight gains and how this calf crop turns out. Now, one concern I had here in the last week or two is China canceled some Canadian and canola. And it's more of a political mode. All of a sudden they found some type of pest in the canola, and Canada tested and there was none in there. And this goes way back in history. In order to get out of some of these trade deals, you find one kernel of GMO in there and it's off, and we've gone through that. My fear is, yeah, China could come through and say they're going to buy a bunch of beans, but they're still using that loophole to get out of these purchases.
Speaking of a bunch of beans, just one final thing to take up, because when we look at the numbers for what has been marketed by the U.S. farmers so far, the bean number is running behind. The corn number is also running behind. There's just an awful lot of grain still on the farm.
Well, yeah. On the beans, it was either sold early or not sold at all, because you've got those payments. So that's a concern. Bean basis is wide. There's a lot of beans to move yet. So the producer's still hanging on, hopeful that we get some type of trade agreement to help get them out from underneath the rug in here and try to get some beans off at a higher level.
You know, I was talking to Steve Fried, ADM's director of research, and he said he was traveling all over the country for ADMIS, and he said there's a lot of corn in a lot of places, but there's a whole lot of beans everywhere I go.
Yeah, I think that's true. I mean, there's no doubt if we've got the kind of carryout that the USDA says that we have, we've got a lot of beans. I guess the question I might have is, as or if the future price drops, it seems like that basis has kind of improved a little bit on the beans, and really the cash market, as we talked about in that meeting, Elbert Covington, the cash market's really the market out there. And so if we do see a major drop in futures prices, does the basis just improve some to get, you know, keep the cash price fairly steady? That's kind of where I'm coming from on the beans right now, which tells you as a farmer, as a marketer, there may not be a lot to gain from just sitting there holding, waiting to sell nearby beans. You may want to look at trying to do some hedging out further and then come in whenever the futures are lower and the basis may be a little bit better.
Speaking of that all-day agricultural outlook that we held Tuesday, the 5th day of March, if you'd like to hear the audio from that, it's up on our website right now at willag.org, willag.org. Remember, we had a cash grain panel, a soybean panel, a corn panel. We talked about the price of farmland with Murray Wise, and Eric Snodgrass was there to give us a half-hour overview of what he thought the weather forecast would look like. And, of course, it was the year of the nine, so you're going to want to make sure that you listen to everything that's there at willag.org from the All-Day Ag Outlook. Let's wrap things up for the afternoon. Kurt Kimmel from Bates Commodities, your final thoughts.
KISS. Keep it simple, stupid. I think as a producer, you've got an opportunity in here to try to put in a $4 price floor on corn, a $9 price floor on beans, leave your upside open. You got the flexibility on bushels. The main thing is you got flexibility on where you want to make those cash sales.
Wayne Nelson is with L&M Commodities out of Newmarket, Indiana.
Well, we're looking at a good week here. We just hope tomorrow can finish it off great. Maybe we can get that technical turnaround where we can get a little bit of a bounce and we can do the things that Kurt's talking about at a little cheaper value. We're looking for a little better. We're positive. We're looking for a little better values.
And Bill Maris with Strategic Farm Marketing.
Yeah, well, we're right here on the final sales closing date on the crop insurance. That's a good first step in managing your risk. Make sure you have that done with your agent. And I think a lot of what we talked about today tells us that we probably are going to have some opportunities as we move through the next 2 or 3 months. Just be prepared to take advantage of those and add to the worst-case scenario that you should have locked in with your insurance.
Commodity Week, of course, is a production of Illinois Public Media. You can hear the whole of our program anytime you'd like at willag.org. Our thanks go this week to our panelists, including Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities out of Newmarket, Indiana, Bill Mayer from Strategic Farm Marketing from right here in Champaign County, and in Normal, Illinois at Bates Commodities, Kurt Kimmel. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.